Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Appreciate you listening to AFR on this Monday morning, May the 7th. I don't know what year it is, but you can look at your calendar and figure that one out. Ed Battagliano is with me. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim. It's 2018, but if you'd asked me a moment ago what day it was, I'd gone, May.
But you got the year.
I got the year. Okay. So together, we'll get the date right.
Okay. Ed is with it. Walker Wildman is on hand. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Walker, what are we doing on this here internet, or that there internet?
Yes, we are all over the internet, or some say the World Wide Web. We're on Facebook, first of all, so you can read the news stories, watch the show on Facebook, Today's Issues on Facebook. We're also on YouTube as of the past few months, so you can watch the live stream on YouTube by just typing in Today's Issues.
That's all you got?
I can keep going if you'd like.
But that's to the point. Yeah. We're on YouTube and Facebook.
That's right.
If you want to watch this show, go there, check it out. Now, on Facebook, you also post the stories that we talk about, right?
That's right. I post all the links to each story we talk about. And, of course, you can always visit AFR.net.
And on our Today's Issues Facebook page, that's where people talk how wonderful we are.
Yes.
Yes, most days.
Huh? Or we delete their comments.
Yeah, we're like Facebook.
Yes.
We don't like something, we manipulate it and delete it.
Shadow ban.
We're shadow banners?
If we have to be.
Shadow dancing. I think that was Barry Gibb.
You always go back to the 70s.
I think that was the Bee Gees.
One of those.
Good morning, Fred Jackson.
Good morning. May I just make some remarks about
Please
our
do,
colleagues?
Fred.
I'm impressed with the formal wear of Walker today.
So if you're watching on the internet, watching the show on the internet, you can see Walker's attire.
Yes.
Fred's talking about.
I'm wearing a tie today.
You're wearing a tie. I don't know what's up.
My wife said, what are you doing?
Yeah. You work
here? My wife said, why are you wearing a tie? I said, I don't know. Some days I just feel like going above and beyond. So. Yeah.
Sometimes you'll see Abraham Hamilton III will sport a bow tie around here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have like Walker's 15 to 20 ties.
Yeah, you might
and
as well
I wear
them.
I'm sure. Thinking I need to wear these.
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, in case you're wondering, they keep because I've got probably 20 ties, and I've had them for decades.
Oh yeah.
If I wear a suit and tie around here, people say who died.
That's right.
Huh?
I know.
Either somebody passed away, or I got to go to a graduation. I'm thinking of another time I might wear a suit and tie. Oh, I did wear it to the White House last week.
Well, that's good.
The meeting.
That was appropriate.
You don't wear sweats. Mm-hmm. You know, show
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want a photo with that. Yeah. You know, so there are 5-6 times a year where it's an appropriate thing to wear a suit and tie. But Walker does look good with a tie.
He does. And you're interrupting Fred. He wants to rag me. So just go ahead.
Speaking of passing away.
Okay. Just folks understand we're about to get into hockey talk, so be ready. Fred is making fun of Ed in case you're not going to understand what's going on because Ed's beloved Boston Bruins went down
to defeat.
Playoffs.
That's right.
So what is your team, Fred?
What is my team? Well, they didn't even make the playoffs.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right. So let me understand this right, Fred. You're going to make fun of Ed's team for failing in the playoffs when your team didn't even make it there.
This is what's called kicking a guy when he's down.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. That's right.
I'm feeling pain right
now. Well, Ed, your response to Fred should be a Chicago Blackhawks man.
Yeah.
You should be. And your team did how in the playoffs?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. But it doesn't ease my
pain.
Yeah,
I know. So hockey season's over for you as far as a fan goes.
Yes.
Do you watch the
I watch
the
some
Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I watch some additional hockey.
Okay.
But here's the way it works.
Yeah.
Like when I'm at the house and the Bruins are playing, I have the TV. Okay. Now, if the Bruins are out, my wife's going to say, you
And it's
watch?
Understood.
It's understood. That's just the way it is.
Right.
My wife's been very supportive,
right,
you know, and
right.
all that.
Okay.
She wants me to be, she feels
right.
bad when the Bruins lose.
Yeah.
You know, but now that the Bruins aren't in there, if I say, hey, I want to watch some hockey, she go, thought the Bruins were out.
Okay. Okay.
Now we've got to make deals.
I think that's fair. That's,
well, we got to watch Monk reruns again.
That's a good marriage agreement, though.
It's an exciting season, though. Yeah. I mean, Las Vegas won their series last
night. They're going to the conference finals.
Yeah.
And they're an expansion team, right?
This is the first year in the league. I've never seen this before.
Me either.
It's amazing.
Well, it's Las Vegas. You got a lot of betting going on. So I would bet that, well, you figure it out. Okay, right there. All right, Fred Jackson, we've got a lot to talk about in the news. By the way, before we get into the hard news of the day, there's a couple of good things to point out for our listeners. A big pro-life victory. Walker can tell us about this. Walker, pro-life victory in the state of Iowa, right?
That's right. Last week, Iowa legislature passed a very, very pro-life bill. It's actually a heartbeat bill is what they call it, which means that if you can detect a heartbeat, then you cannot abort the child, which is a very, very – it's a step – it's a very, very large step in the right direction to basically ending abortion. So Iowa passed that last week, and I believe their governor signed it
last Friday.
Yeah.
What's the governor's name there? It's a lady.
I'm not sure, but she signed the pro-life bill. So that bill is now law, unless there's some kind of
court
intervention.
Way to go, Iowa.
Yeah.
We got to say that.
Go ahead. That's a great, great praise in Iowa. And that will severely cut down the numbers of abortions. I can't say that it will completely end abortion. But when there's a heartbeat at 6, 7, 8 weeks, a lot of women don't even know they're pregnant at that time, which will drastically drop the number of abortions.
It'll be challenged in court, but so what? Maybe there's a good chance that will succeed because, scientifically speaking, you can now prove that is a live human being, and nothing says it better than knowing there's a heartbeat. Yeah. Did we have another?
I was going to just make mention of the fact that Kim Reynolds is the governor.
The governor of Iowa. She's the one that signed it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was passed. Congratulations to both those in the legislature.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine there being very many abortion clinics in Iowa in the first place, but still, a very pro-life bill. Mm-hmm. Was there something else we need to celebrate?
Well, South Carolina tried a very pro-life bill. But it ended up failing.
Okay.
So, the good news is these states are moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And not just, your Texas and your Mississippi.
Right.
The states all across the country are moving farther and farther pro-life, which is excellent.
Yeah.
And we're seeing this all across the country, these 15-week bills, these 10, 12-week bills.
Yeah, Mississippi passed a 15-week ban a month or so ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was signed into law by Governor Phil Bryant and is in place. It's been challenged, as we knew it would be, by the pro-abortion crowd. But anyway, you're right, Walker. The pro-life messages, and we're winning some on legislatively. And we have the most pro-life president we've had since Ronald Reagan. So
the greatest thing you can hear is when the groups who are in favor of abortion, to put it nicely, when they, in their court challenges, they cite the drastic decrease of abortions that are going to occur under new pro-life laws.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is the greatest sign that you're making a difference.
Right. And we celebrate that.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, Fred, what's going on, man?
Well, before we get to the politics of the day, Hawaii, more than 24 homes been destroyed now by this volcano that continues to spew lava down there. The pictures, Ed was just looking online. The pictures, and we have some of them on onenewsnow.com, are just incredible. You know, it's a beautiful day, but you've got these volcanoes that begin to erupt, and this lava just keeps flowing. And the pictures, like, it's flowing down streets and taking out neighborhoods.
Which island is this on?
It's the Big Island.
Okay. It's not Honolulu.
No, it's Hawaii's. And I'm probably going to really mispronounce these names, Kalaua, I believe it is, volcano. And the Leilani Estates subdivision, which is the one that's been hit the hardest. Some of the more than 1,700 residents who've been evacuated so far supposedly are going to be allowed to go back and see if there's anything left there that they can rescue from their areas.
Well, from what I'm seeing, these pictures you're talking about, these aerial photos, the volcano, the lava is spreading down the mountain, and you see homes, but when lava takes over, you know, it goes in, there's not going to be anything left of these homes. I don't know how many homes will be destroyed. How many people had to be evacuated?
1,700. And okay. Their count now is 26 homes that have been destroyed. No reports of loss of life. That's the one good thing about this. There's plenty of warning when these things begin to spew. The warning goes out and people get out of town, literally. Yeah.
But anyway, that's going on in is it still a volcano? Is it still erupting?
Yeah, it creates more fissures and stuff continues to come out of those fissures, even though it may not be coming from the main volcano itself.
Gotcha.
All right. The other big news is something that President Trump is tweeting about this morning. And what he's tweeting about is a couple of federal judges. And they are really starting to attack, I guess you would call it, the credibility of the Mueller investigation. And the first one was U.S. District Judge T.S. Willis. And he was actually dealing on Friday with the Paul Manafort case. And I'm going to paraphrase what this judge had to say. But basically, this judge says to these Justice Department lawyers who went after Paul Manafort, trying to connect him to things that they believe that President Trump may have done. But this judge says, you know, you're on a fishing expedition, basically. You're trying to squeeze Paul Manafort to get some information out of him that might be negative against President Trump. And the judge, who I think was a Ronald Reagan appointee, this judge said, you know, what happens when you start to squeeze these witnesses, and prosecutors, he says, have been doing this for years, these witnesses sometimes will just make up stories. They get so frightened, so scared to death, they start making up details that would release them, and they start talking the way they hope the justice lawyers want, that they'll go easy on them. So this, Judge Ellis, he is starting to, it's the first time a judge, a court judge, has started to question what Robert Mueller is up to. Fox contributor and former Congressman Jason Chaffetz was on Fox and Friends this morning, and he was commenting on the T.S. Ellis slapdown of the Mueller probe. Cut three.
The improbable election of Donald Trump is not probable cause to pursue him. They've got to follow evidence. They got to follow, the truth. But the question is, what is it that started this initial probe? And it's become so far and so wide for Judge Ellis to push back on this and say, show us the scope memo. They've got to provide that. They won't provide it to Congress, but they've got to provide it to the judge. You don't get unfettered access to go surf anywhere and every place. You pursue the truth, you provide pursue justice, but you do that through facts and evidence, and let that be where you go, not just, hey, let's go, you know, Donald Trump, this is your life. Let's go look at every single aspect. You have to have probable cause.
You know, I've watched enough, cop shows to know. And I have no idea what Mueller is talked to, what his team is spoken to Paul Manafort about, for example, or Flynn. But here's the way these things work. And we've talked to Abraham Hamilton III on this issue on several occasions. But you go to someone like Manafort and you say, listen, I've got you on this over here. Now, I'll let you off the hook on that if you provide information about President Trump, because that's what initiated this special counsel. Like, to your point, if you're Paul Manafort and you have nothing, that means you're going to prison.
Yeah.
So you may say, well, we had this conversation and you may shade the truth or whatever to give them what they want, because that's the only way you're off the hook.
What do they want, Ned?
Well, I think that's the point.
What does Robert Mueller's team want? What are they driving at here?
That's what he was saying. This
the federal
cut,
judge?
No, this cut that we just heard from
Jason Chaffetz.
Yeah, Chaffetz is they want anything, and they don't have anything, so they're trying to find something.
Right.
And so what they're doing is, rather than just pursue the Russian collusion case, they are trying to find anything, including a payoff to a porn star. Anything they can find But this is one big fishing expedition.
Well, here's the other thing, and Seamus just mentioned this, and it kind of blew through it. What Ellis also demanded is the scope memo.
Yes.
This is critical.
Yes.
This is the instruction that was given by Assistant Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, or Stein, it seems to go back and forth. This was the instruction he wrote to Robert Mueller. This is what I want you to investigate. Right. Now, the Justice Department, Rosenstein, doesn't want to give this up, but Ellis says, I want to see it. Mm-hmm. I want to see how you describe to Robin Mueller the scope of his investigation, what you want from him. Ellis, this federal judge, says, I want to see that because I think he wants to see it because he believes that Robert Mueller has gone well beyond.
Does the DOJ have to provide it?
Yes.
They're fighting it. They're fighting it.
You pay attention to America? Dead. Last 40 years, federal judges, there's God.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's federal judges. And then there's, I don't know who else you want to put in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
the Avengers.
No. Congress, the DOJ has to provide. Here's the thing. There is such thing as confidential and classified information, of which the DOJ, these departments, do not have to provide to the public. But they do have to provide them for those who have the clearances to review them. In Congress, Devin Nunes, there's people like him who have clearance to see anything and everything. And then a federal judge can
see. But they're not provided to him, Walker.
No, they're stonewalling.
The FBI is stalling.
Right. Yes.
You call it the FBI, the Justice Department. Somebody.
Well, the Justice Department is over the FBI, but they're all under the same camp. Mm. So Devin Nunes revealed last week that he's subpoenaed Jeff Sessions.
Yes, Attorney General.
Because he's not responding to his
Jeff Sessions?
Yes.
Well, Jeff Sessions has recused himself from the Russia.
Yeah,
is
but
this
he's
the
over,
same thing.
But he's
over
Attorney General, so he's over the Justice Department.
Yeah,
he
can.
So he has
let
to,
me tell you
but
something.
Now his argument, his defense,
Jeff Sessions'
defense is there's classified information, blah 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 blah. We can't give out names. But Nunes, as head of the House Intelligence Committee, has clearance
over everything.
Right.
So there's
right.
no excuse for Sessions to say
one good
we
thing.
Can't let you look at all this stuff because it might put people in danger.
He's not saying put it in the newspaper.
Right.
Right.
Congressman Nunes is saying I want to see it
privately,
and I have a constitutional right to see it based on. I'm the representative of the people to oversee the Justice Department.
Right.
Provide this.
Yeah, and two great things. Ellis, this judge, what's his? It's something. It's
T.S. Ellis.
This judge in
federal judge
up towards Virginia area. He said to the Mueller lawyers. They said, "Well, you know that scope memo is classified," and he said, "I'll be the judge of that."
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yes, he said I'll decide that. So you turn it over to me, and I'll pick what's classified
well,
and what's
awesome.
Not.
Let it never be said that we weren't happy with the federal judge's decision.
Yeah,
this will serve the only time probably in the year 2000. What did you say we are?
18.
At? 18. That we will applaud the a federal judge for.
Well, there's only something. There's only one reason why they don't want to give it to the judge, is because it undermines what they've been doing for the past year.
Let me just say at this point, I hadn't really thought about this much until this point, but you know what it's time for? It's not hammer time. Walker has no clue what I'm talking about, but it's time for President Trump to fire Robert Mueller. Mm-hmm. You know what? If this continues on, with all due respect to the president, it's his own fault because he has the authority to fire this guy. And if he doesn't do it, then I know there's a downside to that. I understand that politically, and he has to weigh that. And I'm sure there are counselors in his ear going, don't do this. Don't fire him. But at some point,
you think he should?
There's no downside for him politically to what? Go ahead.
You think he should do it now that this TS, this Judge Elliot, Ellis?
Yeah, I would do it today. I would do it. If it were me, I'd do it today. And if they say, "Oh my, don't do that!
I'd wait until this Judge Ellis finished his. If he gets this memo and then publicly, says, and rebukes the Mueller team and says you have gone way beyond this, then Trump says,
"That's good."
Federal
okay.
judge says you're way beyond, so you're fired.
I would agree with that advice. That's good advice. That you would have a little more.
Political cover.
Yeah, go ahead, Walker.
He could also, I would if I were President Trump, and there's multiple ways to go about this, mine's not the best way. I'm just, we're spitballing here, but President Trump.
No,
could,
I'm not. I'm thinking.
You're thinking. Well,
I'm a thinking
not.
Man. Go ahead and spitball.
No, Trump could bring in Sessions. I would bring in Sessions into the Oval Office, and I would say, you can get this under control, or I'm going to get it under control, and it's not going to look good for you if I have to get it under control. So say, Sessions,
good.
You can fire Rosenstein, who started this mess, and you can fire Mueller. Both of them at the same time, you fire them.
I thought Sessions couldn't fire because he recused himself.
No, he can reinsert himself back into it.
Time.
He can cite all the mishaps and
especially
everything.
Especially since he only recused himself from the Russia investigation, he could say this has gone rogue.
Yeah.
You've got, well, as Trump tweeted, 13 angry Democrats in charge of the Russian witch hunt.
Yes.
And so Sessions could come out and say, we thought the special counsel would handle this in a professional way.
And they haven't.
It's clearly political now. We've got a federal judge said, blah, 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 blah. You're fired.
Just so people understand, I know our listeners are very smart, but here's what is happening now with this case, Fred, Ed, and Walker, is what started out as a investigate. How long has this been now?
Over
officially
a year.
Since April.
Has
of
it been
2017?
A year?
Yeah.
Mueller's been in existence for just over 12 months, but the Russia investigation under Comey started over a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Right.
We have this Russia investigation. Nobody cited a crime yet that we're investigating.
Yeah.
So you give unfettered authority. This is what this federal judge was criticizing.
Mm-hmm.
You give unfettered authority. And I guess an unlimited budget to 14 lawyers who all voted for Hillary Clinton and tell them, go get Trump.
Right.
And anybody associated with Trump, go get them. I don't care if you got to get them on a speeding ticket.
Mm-hmm.
You go nail them and make them tell you something that we got to go.
Right.
This is what it sounds like
that
to me is going
it
on.
That sums up right there.
If you, huh?
That sums
so
it
you,
up.
So you've got a year of this kind of stuff going on. And the Nunes committee, they've explained. We had all kind of public reports about what was going on at the FBI. Mm-hmm. They hated Donald Trump. McCabe was fired because of it. You've got this, what do you call it, the Inspector General?
Yeah.
Inspector
General's
report
that's about to come out pretty soon that's supposed to be damning to a lot of these players at mm-hmm. the FBI and the Justice Department who are anti-Trump people. So, you know, this is it. The idea that you could have this go on for a year with no crime cited, by the way, collusion,
right.
is not even illegal,
mm-hmm.
or whatever that
right.
means.
Yeah.
Like I've said, unless you can prove to me that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin got together on how to rig the voting machines in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan, and maybe Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
you got nothing. Now, maybe that's an oversimplification, but from where we're going now, these kinds of things can destroy people's lives. We've seen this gentleman from the New York state, from New York, who's a friend of President Trump's, who supported him.
Lost his house.
Yeah.
Because he's an average guy. He makes whatever, and he can't pay his
And he has nothing. He has not done anything
wrong.
There's been no identifiable crime, but they're subpoenaing all this stuff.
No, they won't.
He's had to hire lawyers.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's lost his home.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
President Trump could do this. He needs to bring in Sessions and all of his and all the lawyers.
That's a good point, Walker.
But they need to do it in the Oval Office. No cell phones. Do it in a matter of an hour.
Yeah. And also, I think President Trump needs to come out on the day this is done. And I just say the quote from The Apprentice, you're fired. He needs to, President Trump and or with Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, lay out the case for the firing. In
mm-hmm.
other words, we've been doing this a year. This is what's happened. There's mm-hmm. been no crime cited. All the lawyers are Democrats who are trying to do this. They gave checks to Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I've waited long enough. I've been very patient.
Yeah.
And we're not doing this anymore.
He does need to lay out that case.
Don't you think so?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, we are through with this half hour. Very, very smart stuff coming from this team right here. I hope you appreciate it, folks. We shall return momentarily. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Now, no one's ever been convicted for the Logan Act, but the irony that John Kerry is really and truly Remember Michael Flynn, that was his job at the time. It was transition team. John Kerry has no authority. He's out of office. He's out of line.
We'll also hear news and analysis from newsmen Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net. and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. It's on our dollar bills, and it's on a lot of government buildings, but should In God We Trust be in public schools? There's a raging debate over that issue in Minnesota. Republican State Senator Dan Hall introduced a bill that would allow the national motto to be displayed in public schools.
God and country is no longer lifted up in a place of honor like it once was. And in part, it seems to be eliminated from our schools. There are those that are even afraid to bring up God and country in our schools.
But atheists and some Democrats are not so keen on trusting in God. State Senator John Marty says he finds the phrase to be offensive. Senator Scott Dibble wondered how Republicans would feel if the posters referenced Allah. Well, that's real easy. This nation, the United States of America, does not put its trust in Allah. We put our trust in God. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in. Tim Wildman had a prior engagement, so it is now officially the B team is in charge. So, Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman, we are discussing the news of the day. Fred, you had something in addition on the Mueller investigation?
Oh, yeah. In addition to what the U.S. District Judge T.S. Ellis had to say to lawyers for the Justice Department the other day, there's also another federal district court judge, Dabney Friedrich, and she's overseeing the first hearing. Remember the 13 Russian-related companies that were indicted by Mueller's team? Rosenstein had the big announcement, big news conference. Well, that case went back for its first hearing late last week. And this federal judge rejected Mueller's motion to delay the first hearing after lawyers showed up to defend two of the companies last month when it was expected no one would show up. And what she's after, she wants to see the evidence from Mueller as to how they led to the indictment against these 13 Russian interests. They didn't realize this was going to happen, the DOJ lawyers. They're going to have to start producing evidence now that led to those indictments. So it's much along the line of Ellis there. He wants to see the, what does he call it? The
scope memo.
That's fascinating, folks.
Yeah.
That is absolutely fascinating.
And just for those who are just tuning in,
yes.
The scope memo would be the memo that was originally given outlining what the special counsel is supposed to investigate.
Exactly.
Here's the scope of your authority.
Yeah.
And what Judge Ellis is saying is, I want to see that.
Yes.
Because I want to determine whether you've gone beyond
the parameters,
the parameters, yep, of your investigation.
So it's getting interesting, folks. All you've basically heard for the last year is every time someone comes under the microscope of Robert Mueller, the media runs out. Here's more potential proof against President Trump. And then you've got the Paul Manafort. He keeps coming up in the mainstream news because they're trying to link him to Trump and Russian collusion, and on it goes. Well, now these Manafort case, the case of these 13 Russians, are going before judges, where Robert Mueller's team is going to have to prove what they've been kind of leaking out there to everybody.
Yeah, you can't just leak to the media, and at some point, the real world comes crashing in.
Exactly.
And you've got to actually go to court. Now, let me ask you, you Fred and Walker, you may not know, I've been looking to try to find, I'm not sure I can find the answer, but these 13 Russian companies, these are not based in the United States or have offices, so that's why the expectation was they're not even going to show up at court.
Yes.
Right? Because they, you know, you can't do anything to us. We're in Russia.
Yeah.
But they did show up, at least one company, right? Did show up.
Two representatives for these companies. You remember, and just to refresh folks' memories, these are companies that the allegations are that they sent interest into the United States to kind of drum up traffic,
yeah,
to websites and all this kind of thing. Meddling.
Right.
All right. But there's been never any proof that there's any connection between these 13 companies and the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. But now we're going to have to see direct evidence of all of this sort of thing. So if you thought it was interesting up to this point, now it's going to get real interesting because Mueller and his lawyers and the DOJ lawyers are going to have to defend their action in court. The,
yeah,
reporters aren't asking them.
Right.
Now they're going to have to go public in court. What evidence do you have against Manafort? Mm-hmm. We want to know. What is the scope memo? What are the parameters that Rod Rosenstein gave Robert Mueller? Because if you've gone beyond that, he could be throwing out cases here very soon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the 13 or so are the three firms and companies in Russia that we're talking about here that were charged on these very broad charges, something about social media and elections and kind of agitating conflict. They hired two lawyers up in, I think, D.C. or New York. They hired two lawyers at the last minute, and they showed up at court with Mueller's team. And I'm, like you said, Ed, Mueller's team was expecting to have a no contest case, and just it's a one sided show. And then all of a sudden, these two lawyers show up and say, "Hey, I'm representing the Russian firms."
Yeah.
And they're pushing back.
Yeah.
And Mueller's team is having to prove their accusations.
Well, and to your point, this isn't the media now standing up for the Mueller investigation, because the media wants to get rid of Trump too.
Sure.
I'm speaking in broad. I'm not saying everyone in the media, but so now when you go before a judge, especially like federal judge T.S. Eliot, saying, "No, I want the scope memo."
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be the judge, to Walker's point, I'll be the judge of whether or not it's breaking any kind of confidentialities. You let me see it.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. There's also been a delay in the sentencing of Michael Flynn. And
yes.
There's been some talk about why that has happened. So there's all kinds of things. This is part of the problem. You've got so much stuff going on in secret. This is not in court. You know, where stuff's been going on. This is all behind the scenes. Paul Manafort, Michael Flynn, we're going to squeeze you, and you're going to tell us something. This has all been going on in a dark corner somewhere, and now you have people getting lawyers saying, no, this is not going to stay in a dark corner.
Yeah, Michael Flynn, some interesting things about his case. It is highly suspected that the original judge in the District of D.C., in the D.C. court. His last name's Contreras, I think, but he's suspected to be the judge that oversaw the FISA warrant to spy on Carter Page.
Oh, my goodness.
So he recused himself within the first week. He was assigned the Flynn case.
Right.
He recused himself. Why would he recuse himself? Yeah. Well, it's suspected that he was the judge that granted the FISA warrant, FISA application. Mm-hmm. But you have Mueller's team, they keep pushing for a delay in the hearing.
Yeah.
Well, finally, the judge, as y'all are mentioning, the judge said no more delays. Either you got evidence of a crime or not. So the judge said on the Flynn case that, no, we're not delaying this two more months. You have to come to court and prove that Michael Flynn is a criminal, and if you don't have the evidence, tough luck.
Yeah.
So, which is a good thing.
They should have evidence.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is what's crazy. I mean, this shouldn't be something that you, like with these Russian companies, I don't know. I mean, you make these allegations, you hope they don't show up, mm-hmm. and you don't have to go to court and battle it out where right. your evidence or your witnesses get cross-examined. That's the way our legal system's supposed to work. So you're not supposed to make charges and then have to go find evidence.
And yeah. it's suspected also that Michael Flynn, I believe he's a military general, General Michael Flynn is innocent,
yeah.
that he really didn't intentionally lie to the FBI. Mm-hmm. And so that's another angle. Mm-hmm. And he pled guilty, so it's a lot of kind of inside baseball. But anyways, I guess the judge said by, I think, June, the Mueller team has to prove whether Michael Flynn is really a criminal or not.
Can you imagine if they drop that? If the Mueller team is forced to drop that?
Yeah.
That would be a bombshell.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. One other thing, a name from the past, Lisa Page.
Yes.
One of the FBI agents, girlfriend of Peter Strzok. Peter Strzok, good friend of Hillary Clinton. And he's the guy that had Hillary Clinton not under oath and wanted to declare.
And rewrote the memo that was yes. going to be released.
Anyway, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, girlfriend, boyfriend. Lisa Page quit the FBI the other day. So,
right. But Strzok's still there.
Strzok is still there. He's in human resources, but he still has top secret clearance. In his job. I just think that a lot of folks, Andrew McCabe was fired there a few weeks ago. I just think some people are starting to get nervous. I think the FBI was corrupted. I think James Comey was corrupted. Remember, James Comey's wife was in on the Hillary Clinton campaign rallies, right. et cetera, et cetera. The dirt is coming out one way or the other. It's starting to rise to the top. And I think a lot of people at the FBI, a lot of people at the Department of Justice are getting a little bit nervous, mm-hmm. and it's about time.
All right.
It's about time.
What else you got news-wise?
Well, also on the president's plate these days, this Saturday is the deadline, May 12th, is the deadline for the Iran deal, and President Trump has to decide to continue on. We all know from statements over the last several days that President Trump thinks it's a rotten deal. We had the Israelis last week, Prime Minister Netanyahu, revealing they recovered a whole pile of the planning that the Iranians have in place to build nuclear weapons. And so President Trump is still out there saying he's not happy with this deal. But he's had visits in recent days from France, the French leader, Macron. He had a visit last week from the German leader. And now the Brits are saying they want to keep Trump in there. And today, Britain's Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, if you saw a picture of him, you've seen him before. He's the former mayor of London. He's now the British foreign secretary. He's in Washington to meet with Vice President Pence to try to convince the Trump administration to stay in there. He was interviewed this morning, Boris Johnson was, on Fox and Friends, Cut One.
Iran is behaving badly. Iran has a tendency to develop intercontinental ballistic missiles. We've got to stop that. We've got to push back on what Iran is doing in the region. We've got to be tougher on Iran, and we've got to fix the flaws. But you've got to do that without just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, without scrapping the whole thing. Because if you do that, you have to answer the question, what next? What if the Iranians do rush for a nuclear weapon? Are we seriously saying that we're going to bomb those facilities at Qom's and Fordow? And let me just remind you, if they do get a nuclear weapon, you're going to get an arms race in the Middle East. You're going to have the Saudis wanting one, the Egyptians, the Emiratis. It's already a very, very dangerous state at the moment.
Well, the problem is, and Boris Johnson was asked about this in the interview this morning, the problem is the verification aspect of the Iranian deal. Inspectors have to give warning that to the Iranians, hey, we're coming in to check this thing out to make sure you're not doing what you're not supposed to be doing. But they give a warning. I'm not sure how many days it is or a couple of weeks or whatever. That's one of the problems that really irks President Trump. But also, you know, to Boris Johnson's question about are we going to go in and bomb, I got a feeling if we don't do it, the Israelis would anyway, given the proof that they have right now that they take care of business. Listen, I don't know if anybody trusts the Iranians right now. That's the problem. And with this evidence unearthed by the Israelis last week, you know, there's and what Johnson and some of these other European nations are saying, okay, let's tweak the deal. Let's see if we can make it stronger. We don't trust them. Let's see if we can make it stronger. Well, how do you do that with a regime that's built on lies? That's the problem with them. And you've already got this thing in place about verification, that sort of thing. I think it's going to come off the rails anyway. I don't think Trump is just going to sit back and say, okay, we'll tweak it a little bit and I'll be happy. I just don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has to make his decision by this Friday, I think, right? May 12th. And he has to decide whether to reimpose sanctions or grant Iran a waiver. And so this whole deal that was made lifted the international sanctions against Iran in exchange for it curbing its nuclear program. That's the deal. Mm-hmm. And so at this point now, here are the complexities. Those were international sanctions. If Trump says we're out of the deal, then we might be the only country with sanctions on Iran. So can the president convince other countries to put the sanctions back? The questions of their program to try to get a nuclear weapon, you have to ask the question, well, if they're doing it in secret, that might make it slower, but they eventually get a nuclear weapon. If you anger them and they say, fine, we're going to go full bore, they may get one quicker. It's a very complex issue, but the fact of the matter is the point of the sanctions was to try to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon without going to war with Iran, which in terms of conventional weapons would be very difficult to go to war, you know, in Iran. And, man, we've already made that. So, listen, I'm not sure what the right thing is to do here. I'm not a foreign policy expert, but the president, maybe he's got something up his sleeve. Maybe he can convince Iran to let inspectors, you know, come in unannounced. That's what you really want.
Former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was interviewed last week. She doesn't see a problem with getting out of the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm President Trump, if I don't get the verification, the on-site verification that you're not building more nuclear weapons, then that's a deal breaker for me. I mean, that's a basic, and I know that sounds very elementary, but that's a deal breaker because, you know, the media talks about this Iran deal as if it's some great, you know, great policy that's stopping nuclear weapons in the Middle East, but it's unprovable. Mm-hmm. And so people, like I'm reading the Boston Globe piece talking about John Kerry's shadow diplomacy, which I'm sure Fred will get to in a minute, but it says here it is. So it's talking about him sitting down with these Iranians trying to preserve the nuclear deal, but it says John Kerry is trying to preserve the pact that limits Iran's nuclear weapons program. Well, if it's implemented, it might limit Iran's nuclear weapons program, but nobody knows if it's like having a law, but nobody knows if it's being enforced or not. What good is the law if no one's enforcing it? Same thing with the Iran deal.
And to Benjamin Netanyahu's big press conference where he revealed, where they basically went in and took all this data, physically went and got all this data. Their proof, at least in terms of what the Israelis believe, or Netanyahu at least, and his wing, more conservative Israelis over there in that country, they believe that Iran is lying and have been lying and are continuing.
I'm shocked at that.
Yeah. this is one of those tough things, but the president appeared to do the right thing in North Korea, so we'll wait and see. But he's got 5 days. May 12th is when he has to make the decision.
He could extend it, and that may happen. But you mentioned John Kerry, former Secretary of State, Senator John Kerry from Massachusetts. in this Boston Globe story, he's apparently been talking, according to the Globe, which is not a conservative newspaper, but according to the Globe, he's been holding meetings with the Iranian leadership to advise him and how advise them on how they can keep this deal going. Now, along with, I think, trying to undermine President Donald Trump, by meeting with them, Kerry could be in violation of the Logan Act,
right,
which prohibits private citizens from negotiating on behalf of the U.S. government without authorization. So as he's over there, now, I mean, he can't sign any deals or that, but he's inserting himself into this. And, you know, he's working with the Iranians. He's almost, I hesitate to say he's on their team, but I think they regard him as a friend. Let me put it that way, as an ally, in their opposition against President Trump.
Oh, I'm sure he's explaining the politics over here in this country. If you do this, you can wait out Trump. You can expect some pressure. Mm-hmm. So, and so if he's advising them, I don't know whether or not that would run afoul of the Logan Act, but that's one of the things that was brought up about the Russian, quote unquote, Russian collusion thing.
Right.
You know, did someone from President Trump's administration have the right before he was sworn in to talk to Russia
during the transition?
This is crazy how the Logan Act is the biggest thing in town when it deals with Trump, but not when you've got the former Secretary of State over there advising the Iranians how they can beat Donald Trump.
Yeah, I know. Well, shall we? Let's come back home here, a little bit of domestic politics, and this is going on in Minnesota. There is a bill in play in Minnesota which would allow schools, doesn't mandate that schools, but would allow schools, if they wish, to put up In God We Trust posters in those schools. All right? Sounds pretty innocent. And my understanding of the bill would require that private funds are used, no public funds are used. Now, In God We Trust is the nation's motto.
Right.
On your money.
Yeah.
I think it's on a few buildings in Washington, D.C. But at least two Democrat senators in Minnesota think this is a terrible thing, that this would be the imposition of religion upon the students in the schools of Minnesota to simply post the nation's motto. One of those Democrat senators is John Marty. He was on Fox and Friends this morning arguing that the government should not be pushing the national motto on those who don't believe in God and those who do. Cut two.
I don't think the motto is offensive. What I find offensive is government is choosing to sanction a certain religious motto, and it's trying to push that on all Americans. I objected to the proposal for two reasons. One, Senator Hall, the author of it, was saying 21% of Americans don't believe in any God. And despite his saying he wants to be welcoming and uniting people, this is the opposite of that for that 21%. It's something that's foreign to them. It's not welcoming. The second reason I oppose it and strongly oppose it is, as a Christian, on behalf of the other 79% who do believe in a God, I don't think it's appropriate for government to be choosing the terminology, the words, how and where we're pushing things. To me, again, as I said, the motto is not what's offensive. It's the fact that government and politicians are trying to sanction it and tell us where. I think that's a very scary thing, and I don't think that's helpful at all. It doesn't promote religion. It doesn't promote welcoming to the schools and anywhere else.
Well, let me correct the – this is a state senator?
Democrat senator. Democrat,
okay, let me correct, with all due respect to the state senator, 21% of the country are not atheists.
No.
21% of the country are religiously unaffiliated. Mm-hmm. They do not claim to belong to denomination X, Y, or Z. According to the Pew Religious Landscape Survey, the latest one available, only 3% of the country are atheists. So this is the kind of thing that gets reported and repeated, and people begin to say, wow, 21%, well, we need to. Second of all, it's the national motto. I think it would be perfectly legal to use public money, as mm-hmm. other states in the country have done in the past. Remember, AFA had this big push, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever, where we had these In God We Trust posters, and states required that they be posted in the schools. And that is not giving preference to a particular denomination. It is simply putting up the national motto. And if these people had any guts, these kinds of Democrats and secular progressives, they would demand that that no longer be the motto of the country.
Right.
Well, but rather than do that, like he said, I have no problem with the national motto. I have a problem with posting it.
Yeah. Well, and I get a kick out of these people who worry that these things would influence people. Well, I think our schools could use a little of that influence.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like the judge many years ago, and it was a Kentucky case, Ten Commandments.
It was the Supreme Court, 1980.
And one of the judges said his concern was that the Ten Commandments might influence people's behavior.
Yeah, they said actually the wording was closer to the Supreme Court said if you post these in the schools, kids will read them and be tempted to obey them.
Yes.
And I thought, yeah, what's the problem there?
What is the problem here?
And you know, the reason the Democrats won't go for the jugular and go for the national motto is because they know that it will be widely rejected by the American people, because our Treasury Department is right now printing too much money.
Yes.
But every dollar bill they're printing has In God We Trust on it.
Right. Yeah.
That's our federal tax dollars. Our founding fathers put it in all of these documents, in our founding documents about talking about God. So if you've got a problem with that, you've got a problem with our Constitution, our national motto, and our dollar bill.
You know, the Democrats are only hurting themselves. In this interview this morning on Fox and Friends with this Minnesota State Senator, John Marty, there was a woman debating him on this issue. And she brought up the point, you know, this is only hurting the Democratic Party. She went back to 2012, the Democrat convention, when there was a movement to remove God from their platform. And I remember that as clear as day. It was ridiculous what happened at that convention. There were a couple of votes, and then finally the chairman there said, I think the yeas have it.
Yes, just completely ignored the booing.
Oh, yes.
That was going on, and the strength of the no votes.
God was being booed
at
the Democratic convention, and this chairman just wanted to get out of that mess quickly. But they indicted themselves.
Right.
They really did. The Democratic Party wants to remove itself from any Christian influence whatsoever.
Right.
And this is just another bid. This Senator John Marty was talking about how the fact he went to church yesterday and that sort of thing. I'd like to know what church he went to, where he would find the national motto so offensive growing up in our schools. You know, if you walk into a school anywhere across the nation today, there are all kinds of posters.
Right.
And probably there might be some Christians that are offended by some of those posters.
Well, this is the argument I made. This is back in the late 90s, using this quote from the Supreme Court. When schools are trying to push homosexuality and put up pride posters and stuff like that, I said, if the Supreme Court is accurate, that putting up a poster of the Ten Commandments will influence students to agree with the sentiments in the Ten Commandments and maybe even follow it, then it is clearly true. If you put up a gay pride poster and you promote homosexuality, then the same process must be engaged.
Yes.
You are going to influence the opinions of kids, and they will begin to follow this particular ideology and be supportive of it. And that's exactly what has happened. So, yeah, putting up posters does influence kids. And the question is, what do we want to influence them with?
That's right.
I think the Ten Commandments, or at the very least, the national motto, is a good place to start. All right. Well, we get kind of fired up there about these kind of things. So, folks, don't let anyone tell you 21% of the country are atheists. Those are religiously unaffiliated. I wish they'd affiliate, but they're not atheists. Only 3% are. All right. We're going to take a five-minute break for news. When we come back, we will have Steve Jordahl in with more news of the day. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. A five-minute break, and we will be back. See you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.